I'm going to bring you excerpts from Luther's Christmas sermons. The date is obviously inappropriate, but not necessarily the weather, for one should bear in mind that in South America, in Montevideo, in Buenos Aires, in Santiago, Christmas comes in the middle of summer. We have Luther's Christmas sermons over a period of about 30 years. He preached perhaps a dozen times a year on the Christmas theme, beginning with Advent and carrying through Epiphany. Any minister who has preached on the Christmas year for 30 years knows that the only way in which to be fresh is not to remember what he said the year before. But Luther, as a matter of fact, is amazingly fresh, and when one compares his sermons year after year, one is astonished, because there is always some new insight. Luther, in approaching the Christmas story, discarded a great and lush growth of medieval legend. Take, for example, the wise men. In the Gospel, we are not told their number. In the first artistic representation, there are two, and next time there are four, and after that, the number becomes stereotyped at three. When they first appear in art, of course, they are on camels. But as the Gospel moved west, the camels changed into horses. In the 8th century, the wise men have stirrups. Stirrups did not come into the West. They came from Asia until about the 8th century, 8th to 9th. the names of the wise men do not appear until about the 6th century. One of them did not turn black until it was discovered that Africa was a continent. So then they had Africa, Europe, and Asia, and one of them had to be a Negro. So little by little, this theme was developed. And the same thing is true with regard to the Nativity proper. In the early Middle Ages, Mary is represented as lying prone after the pain of genuine childbirth. But in the Renaissance period, following the visions of St. Bridget, who was shown in a vision exactly what happened, Mary is always kneeling immediately following the birth in adoration of the child. The legends accumulate. The belief was that at midnight, all of the animals knelt in adoration. That there was a rose a-blooming in midwinter, as they took it to be. That as the Holy Family went down into Egypt, the palm tree bent over so that Joseph could reach the dates. And in one account, the angel Gabriel comes from God the Father with a marriage contract to be signed by the Virgin Mary. Thus the legend grows. But Luther cast all this aside. He has only the plain, simple gospel narrative. Of course, he transfers it all to Saxony. That was a common procedure in the Renaissance. In Italy, for example, the wise men are the nobles of Florence. The shepherds are the peasants of the Apennines. And Mary is Madonna, the Madonna. And the child becomes the Bambino. And when the scene is transferred to Germany, Mary is still comely, but she's slightly plumper than her Italian counterpart. The scene is always transferred to the local situation, and Luther can say that Bethlehem is to Jerusalem as Prato to Nuremberg. It's his own locale. He has no difficulty at all with regard to the miraculous aspects of the story, though he says if he'd been there, he wouldn't have believed any of it. He marvels that the biblical characters did believe. But for him, the concern was not so much for the miracle as for the marvel. He said the gospel is not so much miracula, sed mirabilia. Not miracle, but marvel. And for him, the great marvel was this, that God, the creator of heaven and earth, who had given life and all good things to man, when man rebelled against him, should not simply have wiped out the human race. If I'd been God, I'd have used brimstone arms, said Luther. But instead, God sends his son to take the form of a slave and to be humbled even to the death of the cross. He sends his son to lie in the feed box of a donkey for the redemption of the world. This goes beyond all human comprehension. What human being would ever behave like God? That's the marvel which runs through the whole account. And now I'll give it to you as nearly as I can in Luther's words. He says, the angel Gabriel was sent by God the Father to a little village called Nazareth. The angel Gabriel was the commander-in-chief of all the hosts of heaven. He had at his beck legions of angels, and they were so resplendent that no man could look upon them unless they divested themselves of their glory. Nevertheless, he was not ashamed to be used as a messenger boy by God and to be sent to a humble maid in the little town of Nazareth. She was a very humble maid. Her name was Mary, or Miriam. It means myrrh, bitterness. I don't know why they called her that, though the Jews very commonly took names that were appropriate to the circumstance. And certainly, Israel at that time was in a very miserable plight, just like our Germany today. He came to this maid. Now, why did he come to her? Why, you'd think he would have gone to Jerusalem, to the palace of Herod, or to the palace of the high priest Caiaphas, to the daughter of the king or the high priest, clad in gold-embroidered raiment. But instead, he comes to this very humble girl. What was she doing at the time? Well, they often show her reading. I suppose she liked to read. But I wouldn't be surprised if she was doing the household chores, because angels commonly come to people when they're doing something like that. Gideon, he was thrashing at the time, and David was out with the sheep. She was probably just doing the chores. And the angel came and said, "Hail Mary, full of grace." Oh, yes, he did. That's the way it is in the Vulgate Latin translation. But who on earth would ever call a girl full of grace? I know what you mean when you say a purse is full of money, but a girl full of grace. If I could translate that just the way I'd like to, I'd translate it, "Liebe Maria." For what word is lovelier in our language than that word, Liebe? And the angel, he had divested himself of his glory, because Mary was not so much surprised by his appearance as by what he said. Because he said to her, "Liebe Maria, you are more honored than any woman who ever lived or ever shall live, for you shall have a son, and his name shall be called Jesus, and he shall redeem his people, and of his kingdom there shall be no end." And Mary was flesh and blood. She said, "How can this be?" He said, "Mary, you've asked too big a one for me. I don't know." "But the power of the Most High will overshadow you, and the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and you will not know yourself how it has come to pass." And there are three miracles here. One is that God should become man. Another is that a virgin should have a child. And the third is that Mary believed. And that's the greatest of the three. Now, the angel Gabriel disclosed to Mary at the same time that her cousin Elizabeth, in her old age, was going to have a child and was already in her sixth month. And Mary resolved immediately to go and help her cousin and do all the housework. Just think of that. Mary, who'd been told that she was more honored than any woman who ever lived or ever would live, was willing to go and do the housework for her cousin. Why, she might have said, "Why should I bother with that priest's old woman?" But instead of that, she starts out to go right down and help her. And the evangelist Luke says she went with haste. She's not like our women when they go to market and stop and chat all the way along the way. Virgin Mary went with haste. And she went over the mountains. Now, don't let any of you take that as a warrant for going hiking unchaperoned over the mountains. The Virgin Mary was somebody very special, and she had a particular command, and she went with haste. And when she greeted her cousin, the baby John leapt in her womb. Now, this is a thoroughgoing refutation of the Baptists. Because if John responded to the Holy Spirit before he was born, certainly he ought to be baptized immediately when he arrived. Elizabeth was so overcome that she forgot to say, "Liebe Maria, do come in and thank you for coming." Instead, she said, "Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb." And then when she somewhat recovered, she said, "Dear Mary, do come in." And Mary stayed with her, and she helped her. And then when John was born, she washed his linen and cared for him and brought soup to Elizabeth, and she stayed for 3 months. And then she went back to Nazareth. She did housework. Now let every maid in this audience be proud that the Virgin Mary was a housemaid. Then she went back to Nazareth. Then what did she do? She didn't tell anybody about the great wonder which she carried. She went back and she scrubbed the floor, and she scoured the pans, and she milked the cow. And there were a great many lordly women in Nazareth who looked down on her, who would have been overcome if they had known the wonder that she carried. Now a decree went out from Augustus Caesar that all the world should be taxed. God arranged to have his son born precisely at this time in order to show that he approved of government. Now there are some people who say that a Christian ought not to be a king or a magistrate. That's perfect nonsense, because Jesus wasn't. Why, of course he wasn't. He was a preacher. Therefore, he wasn't a king. I'm a preacher. I'm not a magistrate. Each one has his own particular occupation and place to fill. So that's why God had Christ born exactly at this time. The decree went out from Augustus Caesar. Every man was required to go back to the place where he was born in order to be enrolled for the census, which meant that Joseph had to go to Bethlehem. He did not belong in Nazareth. He was a very poor man. He couldn't get any employment down in Bethlehem, so he had to come up to Nazareth where there was more work for carpenters, and now he had to go back. But Mary didn't have to go. She was not from Bethlehem. I don't know why he took her. I think if he'd been fully aware of the situation, he would have made some arrangement for her in Nazareth. But we can see how poor they must have been, because he hadn't any money to engage anybody, and nobody volunteered, and Mary didn't want to be any trouble. She didn't say anything. She just got ready to go. And they went over the hill country into Judea. The pictures always show her riding a donkey, but there's no donkey in the gospel, and I imagine she walked, trudged her weight in the snow over the hill country of Judea, she who might have ridden in a golden chariot, accompanied by legions of angels, trudging in the snow. And Joseph said, well, it'll be all right. We'll soon be in Bethlehem, and then we'll be with relatives. A fine idea that was. Before they got there, her time came. And Joseph sought a place for her in the inn. But there was no room for her in the inn. No room? Of course there was room. There was all the room in the inn. Nobody would give up a room. Shame on you, wretched Bethlehem. You ought to have been burned with brimstone. And don't let any of you in this congregation think you'd have done any better if you'd been there. I can just hear you saying, oh, if we'd been there, we would have loved to take care of the baby Jesus. We would have washed his linen. Yes, you would. You say that because you know who he turned out to be. But if you'd been there, you wouldn't have done a bit better. And if you think you would, why don't you take care of your neighbor who is Christ in your midst? I'm sure Joseph did the best he could. Undoubtedly, he'd go to the inn and see if he could get some help. But nobody came. And there they all were, guzzling and carousing, and unmindful of the wonder that was taking place in their midst. And the only place for them was the stable. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes. Well, I wonder where she got them. She hadn't brought anything with her. Maybe she used her veil. I'm sure she didn't use Joseph's breeches that they have on exhibition now at Aachen. And she laid him in a manger. Why not in a cradle? Well, she didn't have a cradle. And she didn't have a table. She didn't have any hot water or any cold water. She didn't have anything that's needful at a time like that. I wonder that she knew what to do. She was probably only about 13 years old. She'd never had a baby. I'm amazed the little fellow didn't freeze to death. And don't think that Mary was not flesh and blood. It must have cut her. And then what did they do? Well, the pictures always show them kneeling in front of the child. And I'm sure that they must have been filled with amazement and joy that God had given them this gift. And let us all now gather about his cradle, just as we do when one of our own children is born. What is more comely than the maid? What is more disarming than the child? How lovely she is. See the smile playing on the baby's face, and know that in this little child is your hope, your joy, your peace, and your salvation. Now there were shepherds abiding in the fields by night, tending their flocks. That's a mean job. It's a mean job looking after sheep at any time, and it's worse at night. And there they were. And the heavens were opened, and the angels sang. Just for shepherds out on the hillside, just doing their regular work. That's the kind of people God comes to. But there's nobody like that anymore. Everybody wants to be somebody else. The peasant wants to be a prince, and the prince wants to be a king, and the king wants to be an emperor. Everybody wants to be somebody else. They're always saying, if I were, if I were. But a maid who says, if I were, will end up with a bad husband. God comes to those who say, I am. And the heavens were opened, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. The whole hillside was ablaze with light. And the angels sang, glory to God in the highest. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly hosts, all the angels in heaven, more than there are blades of grass on earth, all of those that ever died in the past, and all of them singing, singing, singing. I wonder why one of them didn't go and give Mary a hand. You'd think they might have taken her a feather bed or a pan of hot water. But there they were, all of them singing, and they were just so happy that they just couldn't stay in heaven. They had to break out. They would have had a bigger celebration if God had let them. And when they had disappeared, the shepherd said, let us even go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has come to pass. They believed. I wouldn't have believed it. If I had been one of those shepherds, I'd say, now this doesn't make sense. That God should open up the heavens and have all the angels just sing to a few shepherds a cantata out here on the hillside. Why, surely you'd think they'd go to Jerusalem and sing for Herod or for Caiaphas and not for a few shepherds. Oh, there's something wrong with this. We must have been dreaming. Besides, says Luther, if I'd been God, I wouldn't have saved the world that way. I would just have called in the devil, have twisted his nose, and said, now you let my people go. But God is amazing. He sends a baby as weak as an earthworm lying in the feed box of a donkey. And that little baby crunches the devil's back and overcomes sin and hell and death. And the shepherds told everywhere of what had come past. And then we read, and the shepherds returned. Now that must be a mistake. What it ought to say would be, and the shepherds shaved their heads and put on cowls and told their beads and went into a monastery. But it doesn't say that, so they went back. Where to? To their sheep. And a very good thing for their sheep that they did. Now there were wise men in the east. Wise men. Not kings. Doesn't say they were kings at all. Luke is right about that. They got to be kings because of the liturgy, which had the verse, and the kings of Tarshish brought gifts. They were not kings. No, they were wise men. They were learned in all the lore of the east. Today we would call them university professors. Now they knew that when a star appeared, a king was to be born. How did they know? Well, I don't know. Of course, they were descended from Abraham by Keturah, and God had no secrets from Abraham, and Abraham had none from Keturah, and Keturah probably passed on this information. So they knew that when a star appeared, a king was about to be born. And this star guided them. Now, let not anybody here take this as a warrant for practicing astrology. This was a very special star. An ordinary star is so far up that people 10 miles apart will think they're directly under it. But this star must have been quite low because it was able to guide them to the very spot. It was a very special star. And as they were going along the daytime, the star traveled with them. And then when they stopped for the night, the star waited until they got up in the morning. And so it just went along with them until they came to the border of Palestine. And then they assumed that, of course, a king would be born in the capital city of Jerusalem. And they started straight for Jerusalem. And God said, you know the way? And he took the star out of the sky. He must have done. Because when they got to Jerusalem, they didn't know where to go. They got to Jerusalem and they found nobody knew anything about this baby. Why, they said to themselves, there's something wrong here. Why, in our country, there'd be more excitement over the birth of a lamb or a calf than there is over this king. Why, the whole city ought to be celebrating. Something wrong. We better go home. They said, well, we're here now. We might as well go and see the king and ask him about it. So they went to Herod. And when Herod heard that a king was born, he trembled, and all Jerusalem with him. One could understand why he would tremble, but why all Jerusalem with him? Because all Jerusalem knew what he was like. He'd killed his wife, and he'd killed two of his sons. And the Emperor Augustus said that he'd rather be Herod's sow than his son. And they very well knew that if there were any rumor of the birth of a rival to the throne, he would have recourse to acts of barbarism. And all Jerusalem trembled with him. Then Herod sought more precise information, and he called in the wise men and asked them when the star appeared. They told him. So he had that piece of information. The next point was where? And they didn't know. So he called in his own wise men. And they searched the scriptures. Now that's the thing to do when the star disappears. Search the scriptures. And they came back and said, in Bethlehem. So now he had the time and the place. And then he called the wise men back in and said, go to Bethlehem. He gave them a command. You can see they weren't kings. They were only professors. And they obeyed, and they started for Bethlehem. And then we read, and when they saw the star that had appeared in the east, they rejoiced greatly. See, God put it back when they were ready to obey. And now it did lead them to the spot where the young child lay. And they were not too proud to get down off their camels and to present their gifts of myrrh and frankincense and gold. And these gifts came in very handy when the Holy Family had to flee down into Egypt. And then they went back to their own country by another way. And when Herod saw that he had been mocked, he resolved on a foul course. He would destroy all the children in Bethlehem up to 2 years in order to make doubly sure. And no doubt he would call in the leaders of the Jews in order to gain a little popular support and would say, now you see, if there is a rival to the throne, there will be an insurrection, the Romans will step in, our land will be inundated with blood. Were it not better that all of the babies should be killed in one village than the whole country should suffer in this fashion? And no doubt they would say, yes, King Herod, undoubtedly you are right. And they would justify the tyrant. Now an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and warned him. And Joseph called to Mary and said, up, Mary, up, your secret is out. He was not like those who say, well, I think we can get started in a couple of weeks. He said, let's be gone. And before daylight, they were outside of the confines of Jerusalem. That night, the mothers of Bethlehem gave porridge to their children and put them to bed and said their prayers and kissed them goodnight. And in the morning, there was not a family in which not one or two children were dead. And there was weeping. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted. Oh, why did God let this happen to those parents? I'm not so sorry for the babies. He took them straight to heaven and they were holy martyrs, but their fathers and their mothers. Why did he let his son escape and let these children suffer and these parents go through this agony of loss? They did not understand that if he spared his own son, it was because his hour had not yet come. For to this end he came into the world, that he might lay down his life to save his people from their sins.